It says, by faith, if you have a Bible that you can write in, could I encourage you? Circle by faith. The walls of Jericho fell after, and again, I'd encourage you, circle after the army had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days. I love the story. It's a great, great story. And so if you want to read it, you want to go back and go and read the story of Joshua and what happens. And so you remember he was one of the spies that went in. They went to go and have a look at the nation. They came back again. All the spies come back. It's too big. It's too strong. It's too hard. Everything's too difficult. Whingers and whiners. But they're two blokes that have faith. And Caleb and Joshua say, this is it. We're ready. Let's go. Let's take them on. And they understand that. They then spend, God says, no, you haven't got it. You've got slave mentality. I can't let you go in. So 40 years, we're going to let you die out in the wilderness. And then after 40 years, the Joshua and Caleb are ready to go. We're going to go into the next season. And then Joshua has that experience where he meets up with the angel. And the angel, he comes to the angel and he says, who are you? And are you for me or against me? Well, you know, what are we talking here? He's a military man. And the angel says, neither. I'm neither here. I'm representing God to you. And he falls down and realizes he's in the presence. And the angel says to him, take off your shoes, for the ground that you're standing on is holy ground. And at that point, Joshua recognizes there's a message to come. And the message that he receives is, go into the promised land and you need to take Jericho. Okay, so he's about to embark. There are a number of things that I just love about the story. The first thing is that it was a process that they had to do. They had to get to the waters of the Jordan, and then they had to have the ark. They had to walk until they got to the waters, and then the waters parted and backed up in the river, and they then go through on dry land through to the other side. On the other side, they have to build a monument. And I just kind of think, I can imagine Joshua's absolute frustration. I heard the angel. I've got the message. The city is ours. Let's make it happen. Just move along. But no, it's a process. I have to walk through the river, the ark down, gather stones, put the stones together, then they have to worship God, then they move on, then they get to Jericho, then he has to brief everybody. When we read it, we read it as like three verses. This all happened. No. This is a process that is busy. That's busy unfolding. It's a slow process. Jericho was an amazing story. And so if you go to Jericho, which you will, if you go to Israel, they're going to take you to Jericho. And one of the things about Jericho is that it had two walls, which was quite unique. So they had a massive outer wall that had been built. And they have an inner wall that has been built as well. And what they have is, and the reason they've done that is so that if you are getting over the outer wall, effectively you're a sitting target. I mean, the minute you come up over the outer wall, they're going to get you. You know, you've just had it. And so from that perspective, it's a real fortified city. On top of that is that they'd rebuilt, they say, Jericho a number of times. And so Jericho was raised. There's a word for it that I cannot get my head around. There's a word that where you build on ruins, and then you build on ruins, and you build on ruins. And effectively what happens is the city is raised and sits higher than the surrounding area. So in the raised city, they have these two walls, and you have a real problem coming there. Then it says is that they arrive, they have to walk once around the city every day for 6 days, And then on the seventh day, they have to walk. And then the priests who are out in front have to start blowing the ram's horns. And as they blow the ram's horns, the people have to shout, and the wall comes falling down. Sounds like a party to me. Now, I don't know if you ever read that story and think about it. I have a wild imagination. So when I read these things, I'm there, you know? And I'm there in the good and the bad, I'll be honest. For me, my mind starts to wander. It takes me ages to read the Bible. To focus and to actually keep reading is really, really hard. I'm convinced I have some type of ADHD. And so now I start to think, okay, so now we've got Joshua giving the briefing. And Joshua's saying, okay, boys, this is how it's going to happen. 6 days, we're going to walk around. You're going to be quiet, okay? I mean, look, let me just be honest, okay? We have some people in our church that have got a lot of words. I'm not going to say who they are, but there are just a few that have a lot of words. This is a small church. This is 1.2 to 1.5 million people now walking around. I guarantee they would have had a lot of people with a lot of words there. How on earth they kept quiet, God only knows. I can only imagine the priest running up and down the edges going, shh, shh. I mean, now this is where my imagination runs wild. I don't know. But then as they walk, I mean, can you imagine the briefing session? Okay, guys, this is what we're going to do. We're going to walk once every day. Okay, we're going to go around. And then on the seventh day, and now you're thinking, okay, well, we're going to attack. You know, I mean, Joshua, he's our main man. You know, I mean, he was the guy who fought in the valley. Moses had to, you know, hold his arms up. They won the battle. And then every time his arms dropped, they'd lift his arms again. And, you know, this is an incredible story. Joshua's our man. And then he says, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to shout and the walls are going to fall down. And I would have been the guy sitting there and say, sorry, could you just say that again? Just explain that again. Okay, we're going to shout and the walls are going to fall down. So both the walls, they're just going to fall like that. Yeah, they're going to fall. Just how loud do we have to shout? No, you just shout with all of your, I mean, just shout your lungs out. So we shout our lungs out, then both the walls fall down. Yeah, that's how it's going to happen. I would have been going, yeah, right. Yeah, right. He's been smoking something he's found in the promised land. He's smoking his socks. What on earth? We're going to shout and the wall's going to fall down. So, walking, blowing trumpets, and shouting makes walls fall down. Isn't that amazing? No, it doesn't. Because the secret was, we're going to have the ark. Seven priests out front, the number of perfection. We're going to have the ark behind. God's given us the word. And when we walk, and when we blow the trumpets, and when we shout, the walls are going to come down. Walk, plus trumpets, plus shout, plus God, equals wall falling down. Did you get the formula? Did you get the formula? The reason I lay emphasis on the formula is that faith is not about walking plus trumpets plus shouting. Can I also say that the formula of faith is not God equals walls falling down? We've got to get the formula right. Could God have made the walls fall down? Absolutely. Absolutely he could have. Absolutely he could have. So why didn't he? Why did God? You see, if it was me, okay, I mean, you're all wondering, like, why is this guy leading our church, you know? He can't concentrate. He goes off on tangents in his own head, and then he wants to lead another way to God's leading. You're right to ask the question, and I don't have the answer. So this would have been me. So God, this is all sounding a bit weird. Could we just change it slightly? And could you just let the walls fall down before we get there? So when we arrive, the walls have already come down. We just charge and make it happen. Because we understand that shouting is not going to bring the walls down. So could you just do it? And then when the walls have fallen down, we're going to go ahead and do it. And God says, no. No. So why did God ask them? Because God is looking for a people of faith. He's looking for a people who says, I believe you. He's looking for a people who says, I hear you, I'm going to respond, and I'm going to do something. And when I do something, it's going to have to be you, else I'm going to look pretty stupid. I'm going to arrive at the walls and I'm going to scream like crazy. And all the people in Jericho are going to laugh their heads off. And for eternity, the story will be told. You should have seen the whole lot of fools that marched around and around and around. And they screamed and shouted. And then they all went home. And we thought it was hysterical. That's about it. Looking for a people of faith, a people who are going to walk and keep quiet and wait for the trumpet and then shout with all that they have and then trust, oh God, the word that you gave Joshua, trust that word comes to pass. Can I give you another formula? Faith plus unbelief, plus responding to the word of faith equals God's miracle. And I say that again. Faith plus unbelief plus responding to God's word equals God's miracle. And for us, I want to tell you that there it is impossible that 1.2 million people marched around a city and there was not one of them that doubted. It is impossible. It is impossible. I'm telling you now, in amongst those 1.2 million people, there were grumblers who were walking and saying, I cannot believe they're making us do this again. Day number six. Far out. This is the worst thing. It's hot. It's Australia. And there are flies. I've had enough of this thing. Could somebody get us a new leader? I tell you now, there were a whole lot of people who were marching and going, yeah, we're going to shout and the walls are going to come down. And we're going to be the idiots that are written in the history books. And I was one of them. There would be people that were marching around and going, this is the most stupid thing I've ever heard. How on earth does he think it's going to happen? And if the walls do come down, then what are we going to do? Because you know what? God is not looking for a perfect people. He's not looking for 1.2 million people that are in perfection and have faith in unison and sing out in a majestic voice and then the miracle happens. No, he takes ordinary people like you and me and says, go and march and shout. Watch what I'm going to do. You know what? For us, we think it needs to happen in perfection. When we read that story, we think, oh, wow, it would have been a heavenly group that came and marched, shouted, the walls came down. No, it's not. No, it's not. These people were exactly like you and me. Okay, we're going to move faster than this. I promise I'm going to speed up a little bit. So let's go. I said circle that word, after the army had marched. After the army had marched. You see, it happens after the army marches. It happens after the army marches. For me, you know what I wanted to do? I wanted to happen before, and then I'll march. So, Lord, here's the deal. Could we just switch the order around slightly? Let the walls fall down, then I'll shout. Let the walls fall down, then I'll go marching. Let me see the miracle, then I'm going to worship you. Lord, let me see breakthrough in my life, then I'm going to respond with praise. He said, no. It's the other way around. I want you to do it and then watch the miracle. You step out first, and then the miracle comes. Verse 31. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. Now, we all know the story about Rahab, but quickly remember the story. Rahab is the prostitute. She has an inn, okay? So she's an innkeeper, and then the theologians vary slightly. Some of them say, no, she was an innkeeper and a prostitute in the innkeeper, as an innkeeper. So any travelers, they kind of had a double package there. Some of them say, no, it wasn't so. She was a temple prostitute. And so she would go to the temple every day, and there were many, many temple prostitutes. Okay, so let's just think about the Rahab thing. Because in terms of Rahab, first of all, she's a woman. And so in that environment, effectively, they believed that she had no soul. She could never go to heaven. Of any sort. So whatever it was, they could not go to heaven. Also is that they then looked at her as a woman, and a woman wasn't just a second-rate citizen. She effectively was no citizen at all. So she's a lowly, you know, thing. And then on top of that, she's a prostitute. So I want to tell you, I haven't dealt with a whole heap of prostitutes. Sharon and I, many, many years ago, had some prostitutes that came into the church. And this is my experience when we chatted to them. They're hurt. They're broken. They're degraded. They feel useless. They feel devalued. They feel abused, they feel hopeless, and most of them have ended up being prostitutes because of stuff that has happened that they weren't able to deal with. And the prostitution is a response to that stuff. This is this woman. And of a whole city. Jericho was colossal. I've been there. It was colossal. God chooses her. Now, I hope your mind has just gone where my mind went. God chose you. See, out of brokenness, out of absolute tragedy and hurt, and whatever else it is, this was a woman who already had two strikes against her name. Number one, she's a Gentile. Number two, she's a sinner prostitute. God says, I don't care how many strikes you have. Not only does he choose her, but we then go and read the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew, and we start to see, look at this, Rahab, Jesus. This is Jesus' great-great-great-granny that we're talking about. Incredible. Other place we read about Rahab is you go and read about it in James. You all know the story. James is Jesus' half-brother. Had the same mom, had different dads. James grew up with Jesus. He knew him. And he writes about Rahab and honors her, the woman of faith, his own great, great, great grandmother. Beautiful. God is not a respecter of persons. God is the God who loves and cares for and finds every person precious because he created them in his own image. I watched a video clip this week, and we'll show it. I was thinking of doing it to you, but it's way too mean. And it's about this very large church in the U.S. And what the pastor does is he gets dressed up like a homeless person, puts on a big beard and a wig, and he puts on old clothes and gloves, and he takes a trolley with all his belongings in, and he pushes it down to the church. What nobody knows is that they have video cameras set up everywhere. And he goes to the church, and he finds a little spot outside, and he sits down, and he puts out a cup with a little sign that says, "I'm begging." And then they start to show the tragedy. People come walking around the corner, and they go and find another door. People walk up to the door, and then they see him, and they just walk right past. It's shocking. It's absolutely shocking. That's kind of the first part of the video. And then he has the audacity, after church has started, he gets all his stuff together, and he pushes it down the aisle. Right at the end of worship, pushes it down the aisle, and then he goes up to the stage, and he walks up onto the stage, and you can see everyone's panic. It's like the homeless man's going on the stage. And then he pulls it all off, and he says, "I just wanted to see where we're at as a church." Then they play the second part of the video, and you watch people come, loving on him, giving him money, bringing him coffee, water, inviting him to church. And he just starts to weep. This is the church that Jesus created. I want to tell you, Rahab would have been that lady sitting outside. Let's go to verse 32. "And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies." And that's where we used to stop reading. You see, Sharon and I came out of a movement where we believe God was a good God and he only did good things, and we stopped reading there. We would never read the end of that chapter. And all of a sudden, I've realized actually this is the beautiful part of the chapter. Stick with me. And it says, verse 35, "Women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two." Says Isaiah was one of them. Isaiah was sawn in two. I don't know if you know that. History says Isaiah was put on a rack and he was sawed in two, and he sang to God as they sawed him in two until he died. "They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith. What? What? These were all commended for their faith. Yet none of them received what had been promised. Since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. And can I say to you, they were holding out for what we have today. They were holding out desperately, says Hebrews, for a new covenant where they were saying, we want to be part of that where the Messiah comes. And now we stand in the privilege of that. And for us, we hold out for the coming of the King again, that second coming when all of life changes and we go back to the way it was originally created, where God presses the reset button, and not only that, it's made better than the reset button ever was. Could I jump? I want to say four things very quickly in the minutes that we have left over, and hear me on these 4 points. I trust they're going to come up. Number one, faith is adventurous. Faith is adventurous. Verse 30, by faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. Sometimes we think that faith belongs to and only works for the very, very holy. But this tells us that it belongs to the people who lack religious identity and moral integrity. Israel was a people without a religious identity at that time, with no land of their own, and Rahab was a woman of no moral integrity. Faith belonged to them. Rahab threw herself at the mercy of the spies and cried out and said, I'll live with the consequences, but I understand that you have a God who redeems and brings people through. I want that God. And on the basis of that, God saves her and her family because of a cord that's dangled out of the window, the cord of crimson, of red, a picture of Jesus to come and the redemptive story of Christ. We don't have time to go there today. I want to tell you, for Rahab, she had to have an adventure in her heart to say, actually, of all my people who are sitting and are petrified in the city because they've heard about you Jews that are coming, she had to say, you know what? I'm going to be adventurous. For a people, they had to be adventurous to say, we're going to pack up here and we're going to take over a massive walled city. And then we're going to go on from there and we're going to take over the rest of the land. There has to be a sense of adventure when faith arises. And I want to tell you, friends, you know why I think in the first world we lack faith to such an extent is because we're scared of the adventure. I want to tell you, we live in a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful First Nation. It's one of the most dangerous places on the face of the earth because it's a faith killer. It's a faith killer. It's so nice. Government take care of things. There are laws in the land. There's peace. There's justice. The rule of law is upheld. It is fantastic and it's dangerous because we don't need to have faith. We don't need to have faith. I'd been here for a year. I was working in a company, and my boss said, we were sitting down one day, and we were just having coffee, a whole heap of us, and he said to me, he said, Mark, he said, you're from South Africa? And I said, yes, I am. And he said, what's the big difference that you've noticed? If you had to put one thing, what would be the big difference between South Africa and Australia? And just off the top of my head, I said it, and I don't know that it's the big difference, but it was one of the things at that time. I said, you know what, in South Africa, I said, it's up or down. It's incredible highs and incredible lows. So I said, the one day Mandela walks onto the field and he hands out a trophy because we've won the World Cup rugby, we think we're the best in the world. We are like, yeah, we'll take on the world. The next day, a whole bus gets attacked and 60 people are killed in an absolute rampage with bullets. And we say, this is the worst country in the world. We hate it. How can you live like this? What animals? But in Australia, it's just like this. There's no highs and lows. And he said, and we like it that way. That was his response to me. You know what? I've been here for 15 years, 14 years, and I love it that way too. I like it. It's nice. You know what? It's so nice. I don't need to have faith. There's an adventure that God has put inside of us. There is an adventure that God has put inside of us that says, go to the nations, speak to your neighbor, trust for the breakthroughs. Let this city come to Christ. It's going to take for an adventurous people who are going to say, actually, you know what? I hate the status quo. I hate the status quo in my own life. God, I realize this is going to launch an adventure that I am petrified of. But you want a man of faith. Number two, faith looks different for different people. Verse 32 says, and what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets. He highlights six people of faith, four from the period of the judges. And I remind you that the period of the judges is the time that they said every man did what he thought was right in his own eyes. And in that time, and I want to tell you, we live in a day and an age, not in this nation, but in every nation across the world, where men are doing what is right in their eyes. But the writer of Hebrews identifies six men who says, now actually, here they didn't live like that. They didn't live like that. They lived according to God and God's way. The writer uses six men as examples. And those six had totally different backgrounds. They had different occupations. They had different family situations. They had a different heritage. They had different experiences. And can I say this to you? There was no formula and there was no mold. There is none. There is none. If you say, well, I'm not cut from the right cloth, I'm not formed and molded in the right way, I don't fit into the pattern, I want to say to you, there was none. Number three. Oh, sorry. I want to read this to you. John Calvin says this. I read it while I was busy getting this thing ready. And I love this. You're going to love it too. Surely you're going to love this. Okay. This is what he says. John Calvin, I mean, are we talking 1600s? He writes this stuff. And he says, there was none of them, this is his commentary on this section. He writes, there was none of them whose faith did not falter. In every saint, there is always to be found something reprehensible. When I read that, I thought, yeah, no, that's for me. Something reprehensible. Nevertheless, although faith may be imperfect and incomplete, it does not cease to be approved by God. Can I say that again? Nevertheless, although faith may be imperfect and incomplete, it does not cease to be approved by God. There is no reason, therefore, why the fault from which we labor should break us or discourage us, provide we go on by faith in the race of our calling. And what John Calvin is busy saying to me in that piece, and that's why I enjoyed it so much, is Calvin is busy saying, Mark, there is something reprehensible inside of you. And you know what? Your faith is not perfect, and your faith is not fully developed, and your faith is not completely the way that it should be. But God wants to work with you. And the thing that excites me as I look at that is, you know what? I don't have to be perfect and have my faith exactly right. God wants to work with me. Faith looks different for different people. Please don't model your faith and try and copycat somebody else's faith. Number three, faith inspires bravery and builds resilience. Faith inspires bravery and builds resilience. And that's the whole section we read about how they were cut in two and tortured. And I'm not going to go there again. Faith wins moral and spiritual victories as well as physical victories. Justice is enforced, promises are received, and power is made manifest. Weakness is exchanged for strength, and sometimes faith gives the strength to go through rather than over or around. And I say that again. Sometimes faith gives us the strength to go through rather than over or around. And some of you know that. Some of you have been through incredible hardship. And you know what? I would love to believe that I can go over it. I would love to believe that I can go around it. But sometimes, not always, but sometimes, God says, I'm going to give you the faith to go through it. And that means that I'm going to go through tough times, tough circumstances. Been through depression twice. I want to tell you, I would do everything to have gone over it or around it. Everything. I would have done everything to have missed it. God said, I want you to go through it. I was unemployed for a year. I want to tell you, I would have done everything to have gone around it or have gone over it. God says, I'm going to give you the faith to go through it. And for some of you, you're saying, Mark, that's nothing. Let me tell you my story. And I know there are people sitting in this room that have had a million times worse than that. I know. But God, in His wisdom, has given you the faith. And you emerge on the other side with this incredible thing. He has inspired bravery and He has built resilience into me to be able to do it. Number four, faith awaits fulfillment. Faith awaits fulfillment. I've spoken about the old covenant and the new, and they knew there was this better to come. They were looking for the perfecter of their faith. We're not going to go there. Hebrews chapter 12 says they were looking for the perfecter of their faith. We live in an instant world, in an instant world. And are we prepared to wait and sometimes not even see what we're believing for come to pass? You know what? That's a tough gig. That's a tough gig when we have to say, you know what, I'm trusting God for this breakthrough now. And I may never see it. I may never see it. You know what, for me right now, I pray for my boys, Sharon, and I cry out to God for our boys. Oh God, may they serve you and live in the fullness of their destiny the way that they should be. I trust God, I get to see it before I die. But if I don't, I will go to the grave saying, God, I believe it will come to pass. What else is there? We stand in faith. You see, we live in an instant world where it says, okay, I'm trusting for that now. Let's pray the prayer quickly and then, God, you better hurry up because we need to go for lunch. I mean, Mark needs to finish up, you know. We're going to have to see it. You know, you're going to have to come to the party here. I mean, how long do you have to wait? Oh, no, God says, I want you to walk and walk and walk and walk and believe me and walk and believe me and walk and shout and let the trumpets go. And you're going to keep going and keep going and keep going. And then you may die never having seen it. But in dying, you say, I believe you. Faith's a tough gig. That's why God says it's the most beautiful thing. It's the most beautiful thing. Without faith, it's not impossible to. Let me wrap up. I want to read two things or go through two things quickly. Robert Morrison was one of the first passengers that went to China, and he went as a passenger, he was a missionary. He was the first missionary that we know of that went to China. One day he was chatting to the captain, and the captain said to him, "What do you think you're going to do? Do you think you're going to convert China?" And his response was, "No, I don't think I'll ever convert China. But I do think God will." Well, if he believed that God was going to convert China, why didn't he just stay? Why did he need to go? Did God really need Robert Morrison to convert China? No. But he wanted a man of faith. He wanted a man of faith who was going to rise up and step out of his comfort zone and go. He was going to go with him. And he was going to help him. And today, China is the fastest growing Christian church in the world. Revival busy happening in that nation. Hudson Taylor went after him, and Hudson Taylor said something that I absolutely love. He says, there are three stages in most great tasks undertaken for God. There are three stages in most great tasks undertaken for God, and these are the three. Impossible, difficult, done. Impossible, difficult, done. I want to say to you, God is in the impossible. You see, for me, this has been a terrible Sunday for confession from my part. You're all just thinking, what on earth is going on with him? You know what? I often want to have faith with things that I know could happen. I want to have faith with things that if God doesn't actually show up, I'm not really going to look stupid and it's probably going to happen anyway. Or if it doesn't happen anyway, it's not so big if it doesn't happen. Oh no. Hebrews 11 is talking about the Hudson Taylor type faith where it says impossible. Difficult, done. And some things God is calling you and I to that says, this looks impossible, God. But I read it in your Bible and I believe it and I believe it's going to be done. I pray constantly for our city. Let salvation come to our city. You say, Mark, you need to manage your expectations down a bit. You need to manage your expectations down a bit. No, I will not. Because my Bible says that I need to be praying, let your kingdom come in Perth as it is in heaven. If God told me to pray it, I'm going to keep praying it, and I'm going to go to my grave saying, God, I just want to remind you, you asked me to pray, let your kingdom come in Perth as it is in heaven. And I'm still praying it even though I'm dying. Let my kids see it. Possible. I know. How exciting is that? That's why we run this church. That's why we run this church. What is it that's impossible for you? What healing is impossible? What heartbreak is impossible? What relationship is impossible? What future dream has God put in your heart that you've put on a shelf that's impossible? What marriage challenge is impossible? What hurt of the past is impossible to forgive? What is it that looks into, as you look into the future, you say impossible? What prophetic word have you received that you say impossible? What is it that's impossible? Difficult. Done. Because God says, it's impossible to please me without want you to be a people of faith. Faith plus unbelief plus acting on the faith equals God's miraculous work. Marching plus trumpets plus shouting plus God course walls falling down.